This is the Own It Show, where we tell stories of how everyday people made ownership theirs to create extraordinary success.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Own It Show Coach Conversations, because that's where the best conversations happen. I'm Justin.
And I'm Elise. Welcome to the show.
Guys, typically I know that we're talking to people who have led in great ways and bringing different advice and different pieces of their story that resonate with you guys in a deep way, whether it's business struggles they've had, relationship struggles they've had, getting to be the authentic human that they are, that's ultimately made their message or their struggles, their new purpose. And to be honest, every single person that's ever found any level of success has had to go through those trials and tribulations in order to find that new version of themselves, in order to find that level of success, because it doesn't happen easy. And today we brought on a guest who has not only done that for himself and ultimately become one of the, if not the highest downloaded podcast in the health and fitness space, but has become a voice that help other people do that for themselves. And that is why we brought him on today, was to really kind of tap into who he is. What's the man behind this story? And ultimately, what has he been able to do to bring himself into this space of ownership and be able to pour into others the way that he does? So Sal, I'm so happy to have you on. Sal is the host of the Mind Pump podcast. If you haven't looked onto it or listened to it, definitely a must for all of our listeners out there who are looking into the health and fitness space. But Sal DiStefano, it's so great to have you on. And thank you for taking the time to be on our show.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate you guys having me on. This sounds like it's going to be fun.
Sal, I'd love for you just to kind of tap into young Sal for a minute and kind of expose to our audience and listeners kind of your journey that brought you to where you are in being this icon for health and wellness knowledge in that space today, because it mustn't have always been that way for you. And what really was that journey like that made health and fitness your purpose?
Yeah, no, that's good. And I, you know, I almost get uncomfortable hearing some of that because I don't think I ever, it wasn't a desire or a goal of mine. But I did definitely have, or I do, and I still do have a deep desire to help people, and the vehicle is fitness. I started, I think a lot of the ways a lot of people start in fitness is I was very insecure about something, right? And for me, it was, I was a skinny kid. I was a skinny kid, and my father was a very athletic, physical person, and I idolized him, and I felt inadequate, right? I was much more into, I was in some ways a strange kid. Kids would come knock on the door, hey, can Sal come play? And they'd tell my mom, tell them I'm not here because I was reading the encyclopedia. That's a true story. And I get teased about it by family members as I grew up, but I used to love to read and learn. I love being around people. But I felt, I wanted to be like my dad, and I was this kind of skinny, not physical kid, and strength training was like, okay, this is something I can do to be stronger and to be more adequate, right? To help my self-image. And my dad had a weight set in the backyard. He never really used it. He bought it and used it for a quick second, but then it just kind of sat back there. And I would always try to go and work out, and my mom wouldn't let me because I was too young. And they finally let me, use the weights in the backyard when I was 14 years old. That's when I got the green light. And so I went back there. Now, up until this point, I'd been reading about, strength training and working out. And I think it was my 14th birthday that somebody bought me Arnold Schwarzenegger's Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding. Okay. So I still have that copy, by the way, here in Mind Pump Studio. And it's all wrapped in tape because I read through that thing a bazillion times. And it's basically a book that talks about Arnold's philosophy about exercise with resistance training, strength training. But really, it's like a catalog of, almost every free weight exercise you could think of, and then some cable and machine exercises of the era. So it's like the 70s and 80s, right? So I bought that book. And as soon as I got the green light, I started working out, and I immediately fell in love and became obsessed with exercise, with strength training. And it was the personal growth. This is me looking back now. Okay. It was the empowerment feeling of it. Like, here's something I can do. I feel a particular way about myself. Here's something I can do to change that. And I, because I can become very obsessive, I tend to have that personality. I like to read. I learned everything I could about the science and the culture surrounding building muscle. So I read every magazine that was, you know, that was on the topic. If I went to the library, I would, you know, get books on chemistry so I could potentially learn about supplements. I'd try and read obscure studies because maybe there was like a secret study out there that the Soviets did on building muscle, and I'll learn something. So I just became utterly obsessed with it. And every day after school, I'd come home and I'd work out for 2 hours or more out in the backyard. Obviously overtrained, but you know, as a kid being obsessed, whatever. And I did that forever until I was old enough to work in a gym. And at this point, I knew I wanted to use exercise as a way to help people. I've always loved people. So I'm the oldest of four kids. I was parentified, they would say, at an early age. So I was much more like a parent to my siblings than I was a brother. I had this deep sense of responsibility. Again, I love being around people. I'm not really an extrovert. I could be both introvert, extrovert, but even when I'm introverted, I like to be around people. So I like to be alone in public areas. I just find people fascinating. I love talking to them. I ask a lot of questions. And I mean, I used to get in trouble for it as a kid. They used to call me, there's a term in Italian or Sicilian that translates to long tongue. But what it means is you've got a big mouth. You talk a lot. You go, oh, you talk too much. You talk too much. You ask too many questions. So I said, okay, I want to do something with exercise as a profession. I had no idea what the landscape looked like, what kind of job you could get. And someone suggested physical therapy because they use exercise to help people in a medical setting. I said, oh, that's what I want to do. Then I want to be a physical therapist. And I had a membership to the local 24-hour fitness. And my mom said, hey, you know, that'd be a great place to get a job. At this, I had been working since the age of 15, like a wash dishes and stuff at restaurants and whatnot. And I was like, oh, mom, I'm old enough to work in the gym. And she said, that's a great place to start because it kind of gets your foot in the door into learning how to use exercise for physical therapy. I said, oh, that's right. That's perfect. So I got a job as a physical therapist and as a personal trainer. And I mean, it was the first, and I've experienced this four times in my life, but it was the first time I've always kind of felt uncomfortable. I'm almost in any setting. So as much as I love people and being around them, I never felt like I totally fit in into anything that I was doing. But it was the first time in my life where I felt like this is what I'm supposed to do. And I remember the first day I show up to work and I was supposed to follow this trainer around who was doing orientations. So people buy a membership, they get an orientation. And then as a trainer, he would show them how to use certain pieces of equipment. And then what he was going to try and do is get them to hire him as a trainer, right? That was the goal. So he's explaining this to me because I have no idea how I get paid. I just got hired, had no idea what I made. That's how excited I was. I was like, I don't care. Let me just do this. And I said, how much do we make? And he goes, oh, well, you can either make, I don't remember what minimum wage was back then, but like $7 an hour, or you can make, you know, $17 an hour. I'm like, how do I make 17? He goes, well, they have to hire you. I said, oh, is that what you're doing with these orientations when you're talking? He said, yes. So he did two, and I walked with him and watched the whole thing. And then he said, hey, I'm going to take off. I have two more appointments that are supposed to show up. Do you feel confident taking those? I'm like, yes, let me take these appointments. Well, anyway, I signed them both up. They both hired me. And it was, I had started work probably halfway through a month. By the end of that month, I was a top selling trainer in that gym. And then within 4 months, I was managing the fitness department. And then it was time to enroll in classes for college to start on this path towards, you know, physical therapy. And I really don't like sitting in classrooms, really don't like it. My grades were always okay. I could get away with just kind of remembering things, But I really hate, I mean, you talk to my business partners now and they'll tell you when we have meetings, like it's annoying. I'll stand up. I got to walk around. I have to like tear something in half while we're doing it's, you know, it's like ADD, but you know, my own version of it, I guess. And I just don't thrive in that type of an environment. I thrive in discussion. I'm either totally obsessed or I'm not interested at all. So school, you know, learning things I'm not interested in was like, oh, this is going to be a nightmare. But hey, I want to be a physical therapist. Well, anyway, I'm managing this fitness department. And it's funny saying this looking back, but as a kid, not being driven by money, not really having a concept of what a lot of money was, I wasn't ever really materially driven anyway. I didn't really understand like how much I'm making versus how much I can make type of deal. So my manager at the time says, because I told him, I said, hey, I'm going to start going to school, which means I might have to do less hours here. Oh, you know, what do you want to go to school for? I want to be a physical therapist. I said, do you like the clinical setting? I thought about it. I said, well, no, not really. I like the gym. I said, but, you know, I want to have a good job and, you know, I want to be able to support a family that I start later or whatever. And he goes, do you know how much a physical therapist makes? I said, no. And he says, less than you're making right now. I said, what? So I looked it up and I'm like, holy cow, I'm making more than a physical therapist. And I'm doing something that I like, love coming to work. So I went home and talked to my parents. And I'm a first generation American. So both my parents are Sicilian immigrants, poor. Okay. So like my dad went, he left school at 9 years old because he had to work to contribute to the family. So we're not talking about like, he didn't even go to high school. He didn't go to junior high, right? He was 9 years old, left, came to this country, $200, and somehow was able to create this life for his family. So now here I am telling my parents, I'm not going to go to college. So you can imagine the reception I got with that. But I sat down and I had this conversation with my parents, and I can be very convincing. And I showed them my paycheck, and my parents said, okay, we think it's reasonable because you work hard. You seem like you're focused. You're not a lazy kid. We think it's reasonable you give this a year. And at the end of the year, see what happens and then, you know, take it from there. So I said, okay, I'm going to do this for a year and see what happens. Well, I never looked back, right? I went into general manager, grand open clubs, later on opened my own gyms, you know, did the whole thing, started Mind Pump, and I never looked back. But that's kind of how it started and you know, where it went. But there's a lot of stuff that happened in between. And a lot of it was personal growth and development through coaching and training clients. Really, it's like, I had such a deep passion for working with people and helping people that I always really tried to do best for them, which sometimes would leave me with this hypocritical feeling of, why don't I take my own advice? And that has always, that drove me a lot early in my career to look in the mirror and say, well, you have an unhealthy relationship with food. Well, you need to do certain things. And that always kind of caused me to reflect, and kind of develop the voice that I have that you hear now, on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, I love the last piece you said about the awareness of feeling like a hypocrite, giving all this advice to your clients, but then saying, wait, I got to point the finger inwards and say, how can I level up to be my best self? And like you said, ultimately be able to get you to the point of where you're at now and cultivate the mindset that you have now.
Yeah. It's wild looking back. There was a period there, I want to say, cause I've been doing this a long time, and I think I was in my late 20s, early 30s. And I mean, at this point I'd been, you know, personally working out and trying to build my business, very driven in that sense as well. And I was very much the, you know, lift weights, macros, calories, supplements guy. I was a fitness guy. Okay. That was my extent of health and wellness. It was like performance, fat loss, movement, aesthetics. That was it. And I applied those things to myself very harshly because I was still, you know, those body image issues run real deep. You talk to anybody who's dealt with them, and it's something you always, you know, it can rear its ugly head, I guess, pretty much anytime you're stressed or, you know, having a tough time. And I had my health rebelled on me. That was, I think I was 29 or 30. And I had started developing severe gut issues. And I always had kind of a sensitive stomach, but this got to the point where I thought I had Crohn's disease. Like literally I thought, I lost like 13 pounds. And I was eating, you know, quote unquote healthy. I couldn't figure out what the heck was wrong with me. Doctors didn't know what was going on. They wanted to do all this testing. They wanted to put me on these medications that would have depressed my immune system. And it was just crushed to my ego because I, you know, here I'm this fitness health guy, right? And I can't, and I do everything right, supposedly, I thought. And not only that, but this shell that I had developed of this muscular physique was just breaking down around me. And I had this conversation with some good friends of mine. These were people that rented space in my wellness studio. So I had at this point, when I was 24, I had gone off to start my own business, and I had started it like a wellness studio. And the concept was, you know, I have trainers there, but we also offer things like body work, hormone testing, gut health testing, acupuncture. Like I wanted a real wellness studio. And this was 20 years ago when it really wasn't a thing. Thankfully, I had enough awareness to realize the value of these different things, and that consumers could derive tremendous benefit from all these potential, you know, these different modalities. I just didn't apply it to myself, but I at least valued it from that standpoint. So I have this studio, I have these people working in there. And, you know, I want everybody to work together. And again, I just love people, even if we are different or whatever. I developed these great friendships, and I would hear the things that they would say to people, and I would see their methods. And, you know, part of me was like, that's weird, whatever. But hey, I respect what you're doing. You really care about your people. They seem to love coming here. So we had this kind of mutual type of respect, but I never really, but you know, through osmosis, I would absorb some of it that I could apply through my trainer lens, right? My narrow trainer lens. Well, here I am, can't figure out what the heck's wrong with my health. My body's melting. And I had a conversation with two of the people that worked there that I was the most closest to. And I sat down and I said, one of them does gut testing, hormone testing, and the other one does body work, you know, and meditation, kind of the esoteric side. And I said, I can't figure this out. I said, guys, I need help. I don't know what the hell's going on. I think I'm eating good. The doctors can't figure out what's going on. I don't want to go on these drugs. And they said, okay, well, you know, here's what we're going to do. And one of them said, I'm going to do some gut testing with you. This was before, now it's like a thing, right? But back then, like leaky gut syndrome, if you said that, you get laughed out of the room. Like that was a joke. Now they call it intestinal wall permeability or hyperpermeability. So that's a thing. But back then you get laughed at. She's like, we're going to do gut testing with you. We're going to look at your food, see if you have any intolerances. That was also not a thing back then. It was either food allergy or not. She's like, no, you can have intolerances. And she said, we're going to look at your sleep. We're going to look at your supplements. We're going to look at your workouts. Body work specialist is like, I'm going to do body work with you. You're going to meditate. Like we need to change your approach to exercise. So I submitted and I said, okay, I'll do whatever you guys tell me. I have nothing to lose. And the way I was able to do it was to not focus at all, or even more so, literally avoid looking in the mirror, weighing myself, counting reps, looking at the weight that I was lifting. It was so triggering to me that I had to completely shift my focus and say, I am going to focus entirely on my health. And I'm going to ignore the rest because I know what'll happen. As soon as I start feeling good, I'm going to want to push it, or I'm going to want to whatever. Or if I lose more muscle, I'm going to abandon this process or whatever. So I did. I ignored the whole thing and just focused on health. And I did that for about a year. And my body was so sensitive at this point that if I ate food that had cross-contaminated with intolerances, I'd have a flare-up. So I was just really, really hyper. So it kept me like focused for like a full year, right? And my body healed, my health came back, and I've told this story before, but it was so impactful to me. I was at we had a pool party with some of the staff, and I'm at the party and I'm hanging out with everybody, and I go in the bathroom and there were like two mirrors that were kind of like corner, you know, with each other. And I caught a reflection of myself. So if I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but you see there a picture of yourself, a reflection of yourself from a weird angle. And for a split second, you don't recognize yourself. Mm-hmm. Right. So for a split second, this is a very, for people who've dealt with body image issues, it's very strange, because I was objective for the first time in as long as I could remember at what I look like. I couldn't be objective if I knew I was looking at myself. I was looking through the lens of body image issues, right? So I saw myself, and for a split second, I had this objective view. And then I realized, oh my gosh, I look better than I've ever looked before. I'm like, I actually look better than I've ever looked before. And I've been focusing on health. And then it was just like this, you know, epiphany.
Yeah.
No, it was an epiphany. It's like, well, yeah, you know, the reason why we value aesthetics, I mean, we've distorted it, of course, with media and all that dysfunction, all that stuff, but real aesthetics comes from the reflection of health. It portrays health. So it really changed my approach and how I communicate. And I really started to dive into the holistic side of things, with my specialty still being in, you know, what I know most, which is strength training and exercise. But I really started to develop how to work on things like relationships to food and yourself and exercise. And I started by working on myself. And you know, that, you know, little did I know that that's, you know, what would lead to eventually Mind Pump. That was the first conversation I had with Adam and Justin. And they were really on the same page, was, you know, we want to take all the spaces of health and fitness. You have your bodybuilding, you have your CrossFit, you have your yoga, you have your hippies, you have your whatever. And we want to bring that all together, because there's truth. There's some truth in all these different modalities. But I was training ground for me was that experience.
I want to dive into a little bit of what you talked about there, because I, much like you, had these body image issues dating back to like when I was 12, 13 years old, and being that fat kid that became the fit kid, and being afraid to go backwards. And it's literally what propelled me into this space, and what kind of operated into this health realization, suffering from anorexia, the opposite version, really for about 5 years. And then while still being able to perform at a high level, but was deteriorating my body. And you said something that was really unique, and you used the word submission. Like, you submitted to those people on your team to come in and really help you, and really kind of just be there and listen and absorb what they were, the help and knowledge that they were taking. I'd love for you to kind of discuss this with our listeners, because everyone listening, we all know there's something that we have to submit to. We all know there's something we have to lean into, whether it's something not going well in our relationship, whether it's something not going well in our health, whether it's something not going well in our business, but we're just pushing through, just hanging on by a thread, because this is all we know. And so for you to truly submit and get into that state of submission to be able to absorb that, what was that like for you? What did you have to go through in order to make that happen?
Well, it was terrifying. It's terrifying. You hold on. Yeah, I mean, I was holding on so tightly to what made me feel safe, comfortable, and what had given me up until this point success. So I was letting, in my mind, I'm letting go of all that. What's on the other end? I mean, it's terrifying. I have a tough time asking for help anyway. Like I said, I grew up as the oldest of four. I was parentified. I mean, I went through things as a kid in school that I look back, I wouldn't tell my parents. I wouldn't tell anybody. I would just deal with it. Right. And that sounds so like, oh, that's great. No, it's not. I didn't ask for help. I think that's a hack, but boy, is it a hard one to actually say to somebody, and, you know, obviously the right person, but somebody, you know, cares about you, somebody who really cares truly about you, and to let go and trust what they're saying. You know, if you have a partner, for example, that, you know, they love you, you know, they care about you, they don't have any ill intent. They, celebrating your victories. They're, you know, sad with you and your losses. Like, they're a real person. And they tell you, hey, you have this problem. You don't want to hear it. You don't want to hear it. Like, maybe trust them and then let go. And it is scary, but see what happens on the other end. I mean, I'm talking to myself as I say this. This is a very tough thing to do. And I've had to do it a couple times. But each time I've done it, I've come out, I mean, better. So, but boy, it's one of the hardest things to do. It's very hard because you feel either like a burden, or in my case, I don't want to feel weak. I want to feel like I can handle everything. I can take care of it. I have the answers. It's all within me. It's not all within you. You need other people's help. Asking for it and letting go, because you could also ask for it, but then not take it. Right. You can stubbornly hold on to pieces of what, you know, your identity, if you will. But if you could just let go and be like, I mean, because what I said, look, what it took for me was severe. It was pain. And I don't mean just physical pain. Like, I was at a point where I was like, I don't know what to do. And I don't think I would have submitted had I not been in that place. So, you know, now it looks like divine intervention, but I wouldn't have done it had I not lost 13 pounds, had I not just totally run out of answers, had I not, had people not said to me, are you okay? What's up with your health? And this ego that I had developed, you're just getting destroyed. Like, so that's what it took for me. Now, you want to know the funny thing, looking back, and this isn't funny, I think this is true for everybody who gets in that position. There were a lot of signs leading up to that. I mean, there's a lot of, I could have asked for help or let go way before my health went that bad. I'm happy and I'm blessed that it didn't go, that I was able to come back. I didn't cause any severe, anything too bad, but boy, I could have prevented that whole thing from happening had I just listened to my body and maybe considered the people around me who would say things like, you know, people who care about me, like, you're working out too much, or, wow, you take a lot of supplements, or that doesn't look healthy, or, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, and I know people say that to fitness people sometimes, and they don't know what they're talking about because it is a totally different discipline. I get that. But I'm talking about people who care about me, like my mom, you know, like my best friend, people who wouldn't just say that to me. I should have, and my body would give me signs and signals. Just ignoring all of it because I was too afraid to let go.
And sometimes it takes, like you said, sometimes it takes us pushing ourselves or being in a certain context or situation to push us all the way to the brink to realize, oh, wow, I really have to make a change. And I love that what you said, ultimately, at the end of the day, the most powerful thing you could do was by submitting and asking for help and realizing that not every single thing was within your control.
Absolutely. I mean, I know this has been said in a million different versions, but what is it like that prayer, give me the power to change what I can and to, I guess, accept what I can't.
Right.
And you see that.
To accept what I can't.
Yeah. And you see that in so many different spiritual practices, said a little differently, but you know, what's cool is, and I'm not going to go on a rant here, but I know an easy hack for someone to learn things. I learned this actually from a client. Is and one thing I love training people is I get to learn so much from clients, and I get wisdom like this. He said, you know, if you want to find truths, find commonalities in different cultures and practices or traditions or religions, because they might not have crossed paths, but for some reason they came to a similar conclusion. Usually you'll find some truths there. So like what we just said about, like, you know, change what I can, accept what I can't. Mm-hmm. You find that in almost every spiritual practice across the world, said, you know, 500 different ways. It is so true. That is a real truth. Boy, is it hard though. I think we tend to do the opposite, right? We try to change what we can't and not focus on what we can.
We sure do. I want to shift gears for a second because I know we've really been focused on the path that you've taken to get to where you've been to today and some of the struggles that you've been through, because ultimately at the end of the day, in order to get to what we call ownership, of course it takes struggle. Of course it takes those really tough moments. But what I really want to understand from you, Sal, is and you know, I'm sure a lot of our listeners will grasp onto this as well, is how do you keep yourself in this place of ownership? And by that, I mean, somebody who really understands the balance between health and wellness and a strong mindset and is connected to themselves internally. And you said it earlier, you said there were four moments in your life where you knew you were doing the right thing. Yeah. So ultimately somebody who's super connected to their purpose and who knows why they were put on this earth. Tell our listeners how you stay in that place of ownership.
Yeah. I don't know if I stay there, but I definitely, I value it, because I think I go in and out of it like most people. And not defending myself. I don't think I do it on purpose. I think, well, maybe it is. Maybe it's purposeful avoidance or ignorance. You know, like I had a client once who, you know, she was writing down her food and she wouldn't write down the almonds she would eat at the grocery store, the chocolate covered almonds she would eat at the grocery store. It was like she was purposefully remaining ignorant to that, you know, and that's why she didn't want to write it down. It's like writing it out will make it real, right? So I think I do that. Sometimes how do I keep myself there? Well, these days I have three kids and I have a fourth one on the way and I have an amazing partner, amazing wife. Thank you. And, that is a very strong driver for me because I see my strengths and weaknesses reflected to me in my kids. And nothing will drive me. Nothing will drive me to be a better person. Like, trying to be a better father and example to my kids. So when something happens with them or I have a challenge with them or I'm just sitting there and thinking, you know, how I could maybe be more present or be a better dad or whatever, that drives me to have those uncomfortable ownership conversations with myself. Like, okay, you know, like a simple one would be, I remember having this one with my second, right? She's now 13. She would, you know, she would play and I'd hang out with her. And while she was playing, I'd be on my phone and I'd, you know, work, read, whatever. Right. And then when she come to, you know, play with me, I put it down, play with her. And then she'd go off to play. And my rationale was, you know, well, she's playing over there. What's the difference if I'm sitting here on my phone or I'm not? Right. And I remember how old she was. She must have been in kindergarten or something like that. And it was like, you know, they were talking about things about mom and dad and it was something like along the lines of, oh, my dad likes to be on his phone. Right. And I was like, oh man, you know, I gotta be more present. Like at the very least, she's going to see me. And so my driver was, I gotta be a better dad. Like I want to be an example of being present. Of course, what I got out of that when I did that was like this, there's so much more than just that. Right. But that drives me a lot now. Before that, it was my clients trying to help them because they hired me and I sincerely wanted to help them through, you know, my expertise, which was fitness. And also through my podcast now, you know, when I communicate on the show and I meet people who listen to the show and they say things, it's very humbling, feels awkward at times to me because it's still strange to me, but it's also very humbling when they'll say things like, oh man, I listened to the show and you totally changed my life. Or, you know, I had this really bad relationship with food. I'll tell you guys a story that I'll try not to get emotional talking about it, but we were at this fitness event. I think it was Paleo FX. So it was like this big convention and it was maybe 3 or 4 years into the business. And I went there with my co-hosts, Adam and Justin and the producer, Doug. And we were at this convention. And it's a fitness convention. So, you know, some people recognize it, some people don't, but it's in our space. And this is when we're starting to say like, oh, I think we're getting some good reach. People are actually, you know, recognizing us. This is really cool. And so that's the space we were in at the time. Well, anyway, we're on our way out. And this young girl, a 16-year-old girl, stops Justin and she starts crying. And she says, you guys saved my life. She goes, I was so anorexic. I was admitted to the hospital. And I listen to your show every day and you guys saved my life. And so all us guys out, you know, we're just, you know, tears and we're just like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. But that'll drive me, right? That'll totally drive me because I know people are listening and there's someone out there that's going to take what I say and apply it. And so I want to be better and I want to, and the only way to be better is to own, you know, I don't know, for lack of a better term, own your shit. You know, I can't be better if I think I'm great at everything. Like, you know, I got to own certain things, and that'll drive me as well.
It's such a great segue into that next question, which is, what is your definition of ownership?
I think it's honest self-reflection. I think honest self-reflect. And what do I mean by that? I'll use one that I use on the show all the time in terms of, and again, just because this is where, what I communicate to most. So I think this is what I can communicate to the best, which is, you know, health and fitness. But it's like you look in the mirror and you're 50 pounds overweight and unhealthy. And you say to yourself with honest self-reflection, I don't represent, I can see that I haven't been taking care of myself. I can see that my health hasn't been a priority and I deserve to be taken care of. I deserve to be healthy. So I'm going to start doing that. So that's an example of what I'm talking about. Honest self-reflection. That's, you know, they talk about body acceptance, the body acceptance movement, which has been distorted and perverted in many different ways. That's what that really means. It's honesty with empathy and compassion. So compassion and empathy doesn't mean lying to yourself. Like, I'm perfect. I'm healthy. I have a great relationship with food, or I don't drink too much, or I'm totally present with my kids, or I'm a great husband, right? It's saying, because it's hard. It's hard to have honest self-reflection because the shame comes along with it, because you're admitting you're not doing great at something. But you can say to yourself, I'm not doing this very good, but it's hard. I get it. Now it's time to move forward and see if I can do it better. So to me, that's what self-ownership means.
It's kind of like, you know, to put it a different way, talking to yourself the way you would to your 13-year-old, right? You want the best for your daughter. And if there was something off, of course you would tell her. But like you said, you would do it with genuine love and empathy.
100%.
We have to do that for ourselves. It's really hard because we can be uber critical and live in that shame. But if we can talk to ourselves that way, it makes all the difference in the world.
The problem, you know what the challenge is? I don't remember who I heard talking about this, and it really made a lot of sense to me. The reason why it's so, because when you have kids, I think it's easier to understand this. Like you said, like if I need to give myself advice, if I put my kid in that place, my advice is going to be true and not, you know, muddied through my own potential image issues and shame and, you know, bullshit, right? Because it's my kid. Or like you said, like, I love them. I just want the best for them, right? So that's, you know, I'll do that sometimes. But I think it's hard to do that to yourself because who knows you better than you?
Nobody. Right?
Nobody knows the dark thoughts you have, the lazy tendencies, the shortcuts you take, the spiteful feelings you have, like all the stuff that makes you a human. Okay. But you know them. Like I don't know that about you or anybody else. You're not going to tell me your deepest, darkest, whatever, but I know all that stuff about me, even the stuff I try not to be aware of. So boy, do we judge ourselves harshly, very, very harshly. So it's hard to be compassionate. What you want to do instead is be like, you are this, you are that, you know, you're bad, you're whatever, fat, gross, you know, inadequate, whatever. And then when you do that so much that you can't handle it anymore, then you escape. I just want to enjoy things right now. And you escape into whatever that is for you, right? Social media, sex, drugs, whatever, right? Food. So yeah, it's really hard. Like, how do I talk to myself like I talk to my kid when I know how severely imperfect I am, right? But that's the trick, I think.
And that's where that true self-love, that's where that true grace comes in, to know that none of us are perfect. None of us have that amazing self-talk. None of us have that level of perfection inside, but rather we can give ourselves grace because we've been given grace by somebody else. And rather, by leaning on that, by leaning into that space, by having faith in that understanding, allows us to lead with that compassion and empathy that you spoke so eloquently about.
Yeah. And a big one for me too was understanding that you just mentioned self-love. This used to confuse me and other contexts or other areas of life because I confused love with the feeling of love. So love often comes with the feeling of love. Now think about when you fall in love or you hug your dog or you hug your kids or whatever, you get this feeling of love. Okay. But that's not what love is. That's the feeling that comes with it sometimes. Love is actually an action. You have to choose. That's what real love is. So it's like, you know, I don't always like my kids, but I'll love them. Yeah. Right. If you're married for years and years and years, you ain't going to have the feeling of love all the time, but you're going to choose. You have to, if you want to have a successful partnership and all the incredible things that come along with that, you have to choose to love. So when it comes to self-love, when I say that to people, I don't feel that though. I don't feel loving towards myself. I'm a piece of crap. I'm a this, I'm lazy, I'm whatever. That's not what I'm talking about. Forget the feeling. That'll actually come at some point, but don't worry about that. It's an action. So let's act love. What does a person who acts love do for themselves? Okay, well, I need to stop drinking, or I need to start walking, or you know what, man, I say so many terrible things to myself. I'm going to try to be aware of that and control that. Or, I distract myself on my phone when I should just sit there in my uncomfortable feelings. Right. So that's what that really means. And when I really piece that together, oh man, I made all the difference in the world.
Yeah. That's powerful. I'm going to start using that love as an action. I love that.
You know, that's, Thomas Aquinas, the great Catholic, mm-hmm. I guess, call him philosopher. It's really, love is to will the good of the other as other. So with nothing in return, nothing at all, it's acting. And it's so true. So true. And again, I mean, couples who've been together forever, I used to love training old, people in advanced age, because there's so much wisdom in people when they're, in their 70s and 80s and 90s. And when they were married for a long time, I was always fascinated. Like, how do you guys, how do you work it out? And this and that. It's like, we chose to work it out. We chose to love each other.
Nice.
Yeah. And I'm like, you feel like that with each other? Oh no, there was like 5-year period there, right? Did not like my husband at all, but I chose to, okay, this makes sense now.
Yeah. So Sal, where can our listeners get in touch with you and find you and learn more about you and most especially your Mind Pump podcast?
So the podcast you can find on any platform where you can find podcasts. So it's Mind Pump. You can also find us on YouTube. So we have a exercise demo channel, but then we have the podcast that we now film and have turned into a visual show as well. So it's Mind Pump Podcast. And then I was on Instagram, got kicked off Instagram. So I started a Twitter account. So now you can find me on Twitter at Mind Pump Sal.
I love it. Only the best people get kicked off of the platforms. So it's a must to lean in there.
I feel cool. Let me just say that.
I love it. So listeners, as you guys go forward, we all know that we have some form of insecurity. And when it leans into that insecurity, that oftentimes is something that we need to work on. It's something that we need to lean into. And quite frankly, it can propel you into something which is ultimately your purpose and how you are meant to serve people, how you are meant to lean in, how you are meant to ultimately get there. But the only way you get there is to submit. The only way you get there is to truly lean back and let go, whether that's mental pain, physical pain, emotional pain, spiritual pain that exists. We have to be able to be willing to let go so that we can ultimately empower ourselves to feel a particular way, take an action, and get a result. And it starts by knowing that ownership leads in honest self-reflection that comes from compassion and empathy that is ultimately driven by love. Knowing 1 Corinthians 13, love is patient, love is kind, love does not envy, does not boast, is not arrogant or rude, but insists on its own way. And it's not irrational or resentful, but rather rejoices in the truth of who you are, the truth of understanding that you are different and success is different. So own your different. We'll see you next week.